The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
The Joanne O'Riordan Podcast. A Big Red Bench production for Cork's Red FM.
Welcome back to the Joanne O'Riordan Podcast with me, Joanne O'Riordan. This week we've got part two of my interview with Michael Corain, AFLW Ireland president, and he's dropping a couple of hints to us along the way about who will be coming back for the AFLW series this year in Australia. The surprise guest is Breed Stack, who will be going over after she recently got visited by the Australian ambassador to her home in Carrigaline, which can be seen all over Instagram, which shows really how important the girls are going over to the Australian clubs. He also talks about what it was like linking up all the clubs with all the players and everything in between. So tune in and enjoy.
When you're kind of growing, because effectively it kind of sounds like that you're kind of growing a sport and it's growing kind of really rapidly. Like, what are the challenges or maybe kind of the bonuses maybe of kind of growing this kind of from start from like a women's point of view? Because I assume like pre 2016, maybe when Cora went over, like, I didn't know that it existed at all for women, like AFL or anything like this in Ireland. Like, so what was kind of like, how hard was it to get it out there? And I suppose what were kind of the challenges that you faced when you were initially setting up?
I suppose initially, in terms of getting started in that, we just got a great group of girls in various locations around the country that had played a bit over the last few years prior to that. And they all bought into the idea. Like, we just came up with this notion that we had to promote this, we had to grow it. And a number of key players just bought into that and started to coach the various teams around the country and recruit players. And so initially, it was just recruiting, I suppose, and there was a lot of hard work done in that. And then when we got the girls to the events and stuff, suddenly when we started getting so many players out very quickly, then the challenge became trying to get hold of gear, footballs, jerseys, equipment, goalposts even, you know. So you kind of have to innovate as you go along. So like we've actually made our various sets of goalposts from PVC piping and everything at this stage. But like an Aussie rules football, you just can't go and pick one up. Like they have to come from Australia or London, and they're not the cheapest and stuff. And sets of jerseys, again, they're all made to order and stuff, unless we can get some from Oz off the club. So in terms of the challenges in that, I suppose it would be just in terms of getting the equipment and stuff, sometimes finding the grounds, but that became a little bit easier as we became a bit more well known. But in terms of the bigger stage and the competitions and the international competitions and stuff, I suppose the challenge has been and will always be funding and stuff. And I know that's, we're not alone in that capacity, but especially for a new sport where we're actually so new that we wouldn't qualify for any state funding at the moment. So that's a real tricky spot to be in, because for example, the AFL International Cup that we were due to go to last year was costing €90,000. Yeah. Something like that, and a men and a women's team would have been 170,000 to 180,000 euros. So that's phenomenally high, obviously, and takes a serious effort. And
you have that, Mike. Don't lie, you have that.
Oh no, no. Not anymore. No, for sure not. And look from that side of it, the players have been brilliant in that they have to self fund and self finance and get out and be a bit creative in terms of doing some fundraisers and raffles and whatnot at home, and they've done that. And now that's the extreme example every 3 years, but like every other year we'd go to a Euro Cup. So over the last 3 years they'll have been in France, in Sweden, in Portugal, you know. So even at that, there's a bit of cost involved in that. So in terms of the international competitions and stuff, it's what funding would be the main challenge. And otherwise, here at home, it's just keeping up in terms of getting equipment, getting coaches, getting facilities. But in fairness, everybody involved is fantastic, and they give their time and they raise their own money when they need to and stuff. And everybody, I suppose, has bought into it, I suppose, as I said earlier, and is keen to support it and keen to see it grow. And we've got some good partners as well, in fairness. It's important to point out, like, our main Premiership competition, which is our main competition every year that generally runs from about September to December, would be sponsored by Harvey Norman and the Irish Australian Chamber of Commerce and the Australian Embassy. So it'd be huge to have three people like that involved. More recently, we did an Irish Player of the Year for the girls in Australia last year, and we had Gym Plus Coffee on board as a partner for that. and Sarah Rowe took out that inaugural award as the Irish Player of the Year. And we'd have various other partners that sponsor little days here and there and stuff at home. So all that support is hugely important as well, obviously. And we're very appreciative of it.
Yeah, no, I was going to say like that probably your road of finding some capital and some finance is probably true sponsorship. Like, and as you were saying, like I met the Australian embassy when the Women's Rugby World Cup here was here in Ireland. It was amazing how hospitable they were in terms of trying to get like the resources for us to kind of work with the Australian women's rugby team and things like that. So yeah, no, they're good people, kind of, in fairness. But yeah, like I suppose the opportunities then when you're growing a new sport, like, I mean, you're working with like, I suppose, a blank template at the minute. Like you're working with a blueprint that's kind of non-existent. So like, are you able to kind of like not fiddle with it, but are you able to kind of make it maybe a little less intense than kind of what maybe it would be kind of over in Australia if you tried it? Because I just assume, well, I know if you tried it with my brother, because he's been doing it for so long, and if you get it wrong, he would kind of beat the crap out of you. Like, I assume, like, when it comes, like, from your angle, you're able to kind of, like, not dumb it down, but you're able to kind of, like, bring people up literally from grassroots and hopefully turn them into kind of decent enough players.
Yeah, and I suppose that's one of the challenges in that, because we want as many people involved as possible, and because there's all those different levels of skill and backgrounds, and depending on what sport you're coming from or any sport, you know, some girls might have played sports, some girls might have played sports since they were 12 or 13, and they're back going to give this a go. So we're really trying to cater for an event and a training session and games that marry all these levels and abilities together. And I suppose that's one of the beauties of it. Like, you know, for example, I over COVID, in fairness, over the lockdown, we've had a huge amount of inquiries of people that are interested in playing. So that's huge. We were due to have an event actually this Saturday in Dublin now, but that's had to be cancelled with the restrictions. But I think there was 50 new girls down to come and play at that. And most people say, look, will I be out of my depth? What type of levels of skill will be there and stuff? And we literally just say it's everybody and anybody. Like, there will be girls that have never kicked the ball up to girls that are signed professionals heading to Australia in November. And it's fine. Everybody can have fun. Everybody can play. Everybody can take part. And again, in terms of there is, of course, like, we try to keep the trainings and the taster sessions a bit more fun. There is, of course, a competitive element to it when the actual league matches and the premiership matches take place. And obviously then, when we go to a national level and we're playing with the Irish team, that's fully competitive and we're out there and we're always trying to win and the girls are hugely successful. But that would have been probably one of the main things that we would highlight from the start. And you just mentioned the GA there, like, and the intensity and stuff. I suppose that's one of the things that a lot of players find attractive and they like when they come down, is we're not deadpan serious. You know, it's a team of different people coming together from different backgrounds, so we're very open and friendly, and it's not maybe as intense or as serious if you're playing with your GA team that you've played with for the last 10 years and you're training three nights a week and it's all very serious and regimented and stuff. So that element of kind of I suppose you could say a little bit more relaxed, that element is definitely more enjoyable to people as well. Like, you know, that they can come along from, you know, at a training session any given night, you might have players from 15 different teams, be it 10 different GA teams, 3 rugby teams, 3 soccer teams, whatever, camogie girls, it doesn't matter. Everybody's coming from a different background, coming together to learn a new sport. And we just keep bringing that emphasis back to just have fun while you're doing it and learn the new skills. And if you're good at it, great. And if you're not, it doesn't really matter. Just keep coming back and keep enjoying it. And then obviously the girls that excel up through the ranks and progress on through the professional side of it, then that's even better, because every one of those that gets signed up, it's fantastic for us, you know, in terms of it gives us more promotion.
Yeah.
And like, we've had at this stage now, between playing here in our little league in Ireland and playing with the Irish team, there, I think there's been 8 or 10 of the professional girls that have played with us. You know, Ailish Constein has played here, Mairead Shoiga, the Kelly sisters, Aileen Gilroy, all these girls have, Clara Fitz, all these girls have played in our competitions here in Ireland at various stages over the last couple of years. So that's fantastic as well. Anya Tai, who went to Fremantle Dockers, was our best and fairest player in our competition last year. She unfortunately did her ACL in the preseason match, so didn't get to play last year, but she's looking forward to getting back out there. So yeah, all these girls that play through our competitions and go on to get a chance to play professionally, that's obviously a huge boost for us as well. And for all the other players in the league, they love playing with these girls then, effectively, you know, and having the chats with them after about what's it like to be signed professionally and being able to go home and tell their friends and family that they played with a player that's either back from Australia or going to Australia as a profession. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, like it probably like brings a whole different like wealth of experience, like as you were saying. Like, do you find that the standard, okay, so obviously when the girls come back, maybe the standard would obviously go up, as you said, just because they're back from professional, so therefore they probably have higher standards. But do you find that even like the more you go to those European Championships and, you know, like has it been kind of one World Cup, like do you find that the standard actually is a lot either higher or a bit different kind of what you'd expect? Or do you find, are you just like, geez, we're doing it really well in Ireland? You know, like are people kind of coming to ye for advice on how to grow it or what?
A bit of both. Again, like as I say, we have that situation where we have the girls that go and play professionally and come back and obviously are better players when they come back, but we also have the level, because the more numbers are playing here, the quality of the players is in general is better, and we have a lot more girls coming in from maybe higher level sports, you know, inter-county GAA players, inter-provincial rugby players, stuff like that. So in general, by simple virtue of the facts of numbers, the quality of players has got better, and thereby the Irish national team has got better. Now, they've always been good and they've always been competitive and they've always been winning tournaments, but I suppose we're trying to drive it on even further. And in my coach's hat as head coach of the Irish national team, that's probably what I'm always looking out for, is that we're driving on the quality and the standard of the team at all times, and that there's competition there for places, and that when we go out and play in an Ireland jersey, that we're representing what all that stands for, and that all the girls are buying into that as well. So yeah, it's fantastic to have that success, but all the competition for places, the numbers playing the game, the girls going to Australia, all that's feeding into an overall improvement in the quality of the game and the quality of the national teams and stuff, of course. Yeah, it's all working in unison.
Yeah, and as a coach, like all the different sports that kind of exist, like in Ireland, like I assume that definitely helps as well when you go abroad. Like, I mean, you're not going to exactly go to England and find like a really good Gaelic footballer, you probably find a good hockey and maybe rugby player. But like, I suppose it's just such a mix in Ireland, like, when those skills are kind of brought over, like when we see obviously some of the AFL highlights and there's Irish lads bouncing balls and you can hear commentators going somewhat berserk, like I assume that's just like one of those mad skills that only like an Irish person or someone who's encountered Gaelic football or hurling or whatever would have encountered. So like, using your coach's hat, I suppose that like mad broad range of skills, that's probably what you're looking for to kind of make the league a little bit more competitive even from the off.
Yeah, for sure. And I suppose that's one of the things that, like, the Irish players, be it men's or women's, have that base sport from playing GAA that's somewhat similar to Aussie rules, and you have the basic skills in that you hand pass a ball, you kick a ball, you run in somewhat similar patterns. So that kind of basic skills are very transferable across the AFL, and of course it's a big advantage to be able to, in terms of switching from one game to the other. But the other side, I suppose, is it highlights to the level that the Irish players play at and the level of fitness here, like, you know, especially with the, in terms of the women's there, like the girls that go over to AFLW are fitter and more athletic in general than the Aussie players, you know, and you can, that's not just hearsay, that comes true in the stats. Like, you had Sarah Rowe breaking the 2 kilometer time trial record at Collingwood 2 years in a row. Orlo O'Dwyer broke it at Brisbane Lions. You know, the girls are super fit, and that has to be highlighted. Like, the, even though they're amateurs here at home, the level that they're training to and playing to is as high as a professional athlete in every sense, apart from name, as we mentioned earlier. So yeah, that's important to mention. And also then it's important to, I suppose, utilize that. And that's what we try to do with the Irish team. And in terms of coaching and that, like, Aussie rules is a very technical game, and you could, the list of rules and it is thick and hundreds of pages long, you could get totally bogged down and all that sort of stuff. So like, you do have to learn the basics of the game and stuff, but in a lot of cases we try to play to the Irish girls' strengths, and the girls that come on board my squads and that already have that base level of athleticism, I suppose, and you try to use that to your advantage, and let the girls are fast, they're fit, they run hard, so you kind of use that into your game plan as much as possible, as opposed to getting bogged down with set plays and structures and stuff. Now, in fairness, the professional game in Oz is big into that. And that's probably one of the things that the players say when they go over there initially, and or after they've come back after a season is that they find it very hard to get their head around the fact that everything is like super structured. It's the opposite. It's like, you know, there's set plays for everything. There's set positions for everything. There's like set rotations. So you, like in AFLW, the players rotate on and off. There's no such thing as substitutions, obviously. So they come on and off. You could come on and off two or three times in a game, but the Irish players initially find that very hard to get used to. You know, it, from here at home, if you're told to come off the sideline, in your head you're getting substituted off, you've done something wrong, you're not playing well, something like that, where it's actually the complete opposite. Like you will have a scheduled rotation, which means you could have you might be going on and your coach might say you're going on for 7 minutes, and you might have a brilliant 7 minutes, and then you're coming off regardless, you know, so because it's a roster rotation, yeah. And stuff like that. So that takes a bit of getting used to for the girls in terms of their mentality and the psychological side of it, of knowing this is part of the game. I go on, I go off. It doesn't necessarily have a negative connotation to it, like, you know. So that side of it is probably hard to get used to as well, in terms of your structures, your like all the different plays, all the different set plays, all the different styles of play, and then throw in all the rules on top of that and stuff as well. So it's not just a case of mastering the football and mastering the basic skills. There's a lot more to it. So you do see then, like, the players that are going back for their second year and their third year are getting progressively better, and that makes sense, because yeah. More they play, the better they get. Like Ash Mack is going back now for her third year, and she's coincidentally the first player ever to transfer between clubs, so she's going to West Coast Eagles this year. She was brilliant last year. Sarah Rowe was better in her second year. Cora's gone back for her fourth year. She'll be 40 playing AFLW next year. Unbelievable. She's looking better than ever. You know, so that bit of experience is huge. So, like, I'm delighted when I see the girls getting another contract, or getting a two-year contract, or getting a renewed contract, because that simply means they're going to be better next year than they were last year, effectively.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, one thing that I kind of see over, like, time and time again is kind of, and it's the same in the, like, it was the same, obviously, in the men's game, is that when players are kind of going over to AFL, like, it's kind of less so, obviously, in the women's game, but you can kind of see it kind of creeping in just a tiny bit. Like, people are getting a little bit, like, a bit antsy, like, a bit like, oh, I don't really want them going over. Like, is that obviously a challenge now that's going to be facing like ladies football and AFLW, because obviously the AFLW season is getting a bit longer, like they're adding more teams and the overlap. I suppose it was kind of nice before because you were able to just go play your AFL, play your footy, and then come back and then play Gaelic football, whereas now, well, maybe not now with COVID, but it's going to get a bit more kind of challenging. So, like, do you find that there's less kind of warmth when you kind of rock up and say we want X, Y and Z? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. I think it's not quite there yet, but it's probably heading down that road a little bit. And I suppose it's just as the competition grows, and as you've said, there's over the next few years, at some point or other, there's another four teams to come into it, and it'll be up to an 18-team competition, same as the men's. At that point, really, you got to be pushing for a full season or a professional contract all year round. So that's a completely different scenario to what you might have had over the last few years, where it's been quite comfortable for the players to do their professional contracts. Generally run from the start of November to the end of April. It's a 6-month contract. So while they might miss the LGFA National Leagues here, they're generally back in May and they're able to play a championship over the summer with their teams and then head out again. So it's nearly on a 6-month rotation. This year was potentially getting a bit more challenging with COVID and with the seasons aligning a bit more now, with the GAA Championship being pushed back to starting in October, and the Australian preseason is due to start the 4th of November. But again, I think in the majority of cases, especially with the girls that I've been working with there over the last couple of months, most of their clubs have given the option for the players to come out maybe at Christmas time or whatever, or when their involvement in the LGFA Championship ends. So, like, again, there's that continuous level of communication and empathy as to what's best for the girls. It's not just straightforward as you've a contract, you need to be here. The individual clubs work with the individual players depending on what's required. That probably suits the second and third year players a bit more. If you're a first year player going out, you probably want to be getting there at the start of preseason, just more so to get bedded in, I suppose, and not to feel like you're missing out on that. But at the minute, I think it's okay. There was I suppose, a few instances early in the year where some of the county managers came out and said it might be a case of choose one over the other. But as it transpired, all those girls are going anyway. So they've obviously reached some sort of a compromise. And that's important. I think it's important that the girls are able to play both and avail of these opportunities for as long as they're able to do so. But I suppose, again, from a coach's point of view, I would have always said to the girls, if the first players that decide that they're going to stay out there and play a full season, like AFLW is the premier competition, but there's only like 7 or 8 rounds effectively. So if you play finals as well, you might play 9 matches in total for the year, which is not a lot. But the secondary competition or the state leagues, so in Victoria, that would be the VFLW, which would be kind of the next level down. That would run for maybe 18 or 20 rounds and generally would start after AFLW. So I'm kind of the view that if you decide to stay out there, play your AFLW, play another 20 games of VFLW, by the time the next season comes around, you're going to be an absolutely awesome player. You know, as opposed to, I know the girls are doing it, but it's a little bit challenging to play 6 months of one sport, come back, totally adjust, play 6 months of another sport, go back. You know, you're continuously not starting from scratch, of course, but you're continuously trying to recalibrate with a new sport, a new ball, a new style of kicking, a new style of gameplay. And that's got to be hard, but to their credit, the girls are doing an amazing job. But I just think at some point, it is going to be a harder decision in that if you're going to go, you're probably going to have to go for the year. And especially now, we've just seen the introduction of two-year contracts for the first time ever, even though they're still semi-pro. But as soon as the league goes to 18 teams, I think everybody's going to be pushing that they play the same amount of matches as the men, and that's effectively an all-round year season, you know. So at the moment, it's not a major thing, but at some point down the line, it's going to become more critical, I think, yeah.
Yeah, like when, as you were saying, the two teams are kind of going to come in probably in the next few years. So like this is probably going to come kind of really soon. And I suppose then we'll see, not necessarily animosity, but maybe that's when we'll see kind of the kind of begrudgery is the kind of the wrong word as well. But I suppose the intensity, kind of the fractious kind of relationships kind of peeping through. But just in general, like I suppose just to wrap up, like what do you see is the future for women in Australian rules, either in Ireland and even internationally? Like, I mean, obviously it's a growing sport. So do you think it's going to keep going on the up and up, especially with all the girls signing? And like what targets are you hoping to hit kind of post-COVID, if there is a post-COVID world anymore? What kind of targets are you aspiring to kind of hit?
Yeah, I suppose this year it's out the window a little bit, but the good news is, and this has probably surpassed expectations, is that there's 16 girls signed to go over and play already, compared to 18 signed players last year. 16 are confirmed. There is going to be at least one other player going over, so that will go up to 17. So that's a bit of an exclusive for you there, Joanne. I'm not going to give you any names or anything like that, but we're definitely going to
off air because I'm nosy anyways.
we're definitely going to see another Irish player announced possibly in the next week even, and then the AFLW draft takes place in October, so there's an opportunity maybe for another player or two to be drafted through that system as well, but there's nothing guaranteed about that. So yeah, in terms of the year that's in it, it's fantastic to see 16/17 players going over for 2021. Where are those numbers going to go? I would have always thought in normal circumstances, we probably could have gone to the 20-25 mark this season. That's obviously curtailed a little bit now. But you also have the scenario happening now where the level of talent coming through the Australian girls is getting much better. So the field is equalizing a little bit, I suppose, for want of a better description. So in 3 or 4 years' time, if the team numbers stay the same, is there going to be the same amount of interest in the Irish girls? Hard to know. Hopefully the numbers will maintain. But it is important to point out that the Australian talent is getting much better. So when the competition started initially 4 or 5 years ago, there wouldn't have been any outlet for Australian young girls to play football prior to that. There simply wasn't women's leagues and stuff. Whereas now we're 5 years in. So if, for example, the first year that you saw Laura Corrigan playing in Melbourne Demons and you started playing Aussie rules as a 13-year-old in Melbourne, you're going to be 18 now and you're going to be into the draft system. So there's a raft of Australian talent coming through that mightn't have been there previously. But on the flip side of that is if those other 4 teams, new teams come in, that means there's a and a requirement for X amount of players, maybe another 120, 140 players very suddenly as well. So if the competition keeps growing, the appetite for the Irish players should be there, and particularly given that the success, I suppose, of it. It's not just a case of the girls are going over and getting contracts and making up the numbers. They're playing exceptionally well. You know, we have a number of players hitting the top four or five in their club's best and fairest. Aileen Gilroy was number four in the North Melbourne best and fairest this season. I think Cora has been in the Giants best and fairest over the last few years. Sarah Rowe maybe made top five last year. So these girls are impressing. They're getting a job done. So I think the appetite is going to be there for sure. And we can only hope that we keep promoting and we see more and more Irish girls returning. And as you say, at some time we might get to the pinch point where it's professional and you're going over for a year or two at a time. And then it becomes more of a personal decision for the girls if they want to go and try as it was or if they want to stay and play GAA here at home. But the important thing is there's lots of opportunities and it's all, the numbers are heading up and it's all heading in the right direction.
Yeah, no, sounds good. And if you ever need any crazy psychopathic recording person who's not that good at production to come over and help out, I'll gladly do it, no problem. I think I deserve a trip to Australia after this, guys. Not going to lie.
That was part two of my interview with AFLW Ireland President Michael Curran. Coming up next week, we've got 1500 metre champion, 800 metre champion, indoor and outdoor, champion runner Amy O'Donoghue. Amy O'Donoghue is going to be talking to us about her running career, what mental skills she uses in order to further her running career, and what her hopes and dreams will be for the 2021 season. Don't forget to follow us on social at @JoanneOR_OX and at Big Red Bench. Cheerio!
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.